Starting. Are we good?
We're live.
All right. Welcome to the Renegade Society Radio number 6. And today we are super duper lucky to have Aaron Vanderbeek with us, the designer of one of the most amazing games ever made about the Castell sport, or the game of the wonderful sport of Castell. And we also have Scott Gato with us here this evening, president of Renegade, and I am Sarah Erickson. And we are so excited to have you guys in the chat room. So we are going to be asking Aaron some fantastic questions, but we'll also be watching. So if you guys have any questions for Aaron, please, please, please put those in the chat and we will get to them as we go. So Aaron, how's it going tonight?
It's going great. Thanks awesome. For having me on.
Yeah. So where are you at? Where do you live in this fine country?
I live in San Francisco, California. I've been here about 10 years.
That's awesome. So What do you do for a day job in San Francisco?
I design video games, actually, for a company called Super Lucky.
Oh my gosh. So what's their big thing? Like, what keeps you guys with the lights on?
Yeah, so we do games from a lot of different genres. We started out doing a lot of casino games and specifically slots as well. But we also have a bingo game, and we've started getting more into casual games. So we're doing a lot of word games right now. We have some other casual genres that we're going to explore after we get through all of these word games.
That's fair. So what do you do with your company?
So I am executive producer, but I came to them through basically doing all the game design. So I'm responsible for all the design and managing our other game designers as well for all of our projects.
That's awesome. Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, there was basically nothing in the world that would have been cooler than being a video game designer. And now I talk to so many video game designers who want to be board game designers, but you're super lucky. You got to do both.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. I mean, I sort of, you know, like casino games and some casual games, they're not always the type of games that I play. So it's nice to be able to have both. So I'm able to sort of use my skills at my job, but also apply them to my hobby as well.
That makes sense. I see your shelf behind you. You have a lot of really fantastic games there, even one by J. Alex Caverne, one of the most amazing game designers I've personally gotten to meet.
Yeah, that's right.
He's wonderful. So that's pretty awesome. Mm. So what got you into gaming in the first place?
I've played games my whole life. I mean, I hang on, my original NES was my first console back in the day. And that was a big thing that my group of friends was sort of centered around all the way up through N64 and whatnot. And then in high school, I played a lot of Magic the Gathering, which was, I played board games with my family and stuff, but that was probably once I like really got into gaming. Like, I don't know, like on the table, I guess. And even in college, I was like traveling around the world to play Magic tournaments and stuff. So when I play games, I tend to really try to understand them. And originally that came from a sort of competitive fire, but now it comes from a desire to be a better designer.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So Aaron, what era were you playing card games? When were you traveling around?
It was probably 2002 to 2006.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so at least 10 years ago. Yeah. Sometimes it's shocking to realize how old Magic is.
Yeah, a lot of us started there. I think it's one of the cool things, is sort of this common denominator of a lot of game designers and gamers in general. That it was just such a big thing in the 90s. We all either played Magic or Pokemon or a little bit of both.
Yeah,
that's awesome. All right, so what kind of Magic deck did you play? I'm going to guess blue. Yes?
Yeah, I was always a control player.
Yep. Figured that one out. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, that's right.
You guys were kind of jerks.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, yeah. I was definitely a rules lawyer back in the day. But
nothing wrong with that.
So were you like the type of player that would go to Friday Night Magic and make like the casual players cry?
No. In the casual scenarios, I was okay, but in the PTQ, okay. I was ruthless.
All right.
What's the biggest tournament you ever made top eight in?
What's that?
The biggest tournament you ever top eighted.
Oh, gosh. I never top eighted a pro tour. The best I got was like top 16, which is still pretty good. But almost in like every regional, I was in the top eight, which would bring me to nationals every year.
That's a pretty big deal. For people who didn't play Magic, those are huge events, incredibly competitive. That's an amazing feat, actually.
That's yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah. So back to more current time. So you started playing Euro games and started designing them yourself. And so what's the first game that you designed?
even like unpublished ones or...
Sure. Stuff you've got on your shelf that you've played a bunch.
That I've played?
Of your own, yeah.
Oh, okay. Wait, I'm confused. Are you asking me the first games that I designed or played?
First games that you designed, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. well, the first one that's being published is Castell. but I've been making board games for a while. Even as exercises for, when I was training to become a better game designer and whatnot, earlier in my career also.
Nice. So,
how often do you find that interactive designers are designing board games as an exercise to hone their design skills?
I think paper prototyping is a pretty common practice. So even if they're not doing it deliberately, I think a lot of interactive designers tend to do it. Even like when you're prototyping a mechanic, you can often distill it to its simplest aspects and then kind of get a sense of whether it's going to be fun or not. But also like designing a board game compared to a video game it's a nice exercise from a system standpoint, but or a narrative standpoint, depending on what your goal is. So if you're trying to like flex your narrative muscle, you would go down the sort of D&D RPG route. And if you kind of want to practice your systems design skills, you would design more like a Euro or an economic game.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So I found that in interactive studios, everybody there wants to make board games.
Sure. Well, one day, yeah. do you think that they actually make them also, or is it?
I think it works in both directions. Like I've known a lot of people that got their start in tabletop design that then went on and work in interactive. Mm. So, I think it goes both ways and I'm sure it kind of goes the other way too. But I think that it's, there's something visceral, right, about making something that's going to be played on the table. So
it
seems to be pretty common thread. Every other online designers, interactive designers that I talk to, that's at bare minimum they want to work on one, or they all have a prototype that they're working on, or they're all playing board games in their spare time. So
and also no matter how people get interested in games, either through video or tabletop, if you're ultimately trying to make a living as a game designer, you kind of need to go to video games. until you release a bunch of hit board games,
right?
Maybe then you can focus on that full time. Or start your own publishing company.
I think that it's interesting. Kickstarter's allowed so many people who were in your position to go that route and publish games themselves, but it is a lot of extra work and you get to keep doing your day job and then design games, which seems like the fun part to me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, if I can focus on designing, then I will.
That's understandable.
Yeah.
So you met up with Scott at a Protospiel, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, up in San Jose, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming up again, actually.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to be able to. Yeah, I can't make it to that one. It's right on top of the Gamma Trade Show again. It's just too tight. Yeah, I wish I could go. It was a really cool event.
Yeah, I really like it too. Generally, very high concentration of designers, so good to catch up with everyone there, and also just lots of great game playing.
Yeah. How valuable do you find having other game designers play your game and getting feedback from them is compared to having just regular enthusiasts and players playing and giving you feedback? Like, how do you differentiate between that feedback?
I really like game designer feedback earlier in a prototype. You can maybe have, or for one, game designers will often put up with more or be able to overlook more issues with a game, and give you more sort of like distilled or like insightful or pinpointed feedback without getting hung up on perhaps some of the like UI related issues with your components or game. So I try not to show prototypes to players until I've like really made the components feel good and like made the prototype at a certain like quality of aesthetic, so that that doesn't get in the way of people's observable experience. Yeah, but I mean, once a prototype gets to like a mature stage, I still will play it with game designers and obviously players as well. And I mean, I think I generally am still looking for the same things in a playtest. Like, are the players engaged during the game? And if not, then I try to understand why, or if people are making sort of comments or offhand comments along the way, I sort of try to like pick up on that and pay attention to that while people are playing. So I'm not as much into post-game surveys and that sort of stuff. I'm mostly like really observing people when they play and just try and notice how people are acting while they're playing it.
Yeah.
With Castell, and then I really noticed a shift, which sort of made me feel like it was ready for publishing, where people just stopped treating it like a prototype, which was interesting to observe that over, I think I did probably at least over 200 playtests of Castell over the history of the game. And and yeah, people would just play it. And then when people play a prototype, they always feel like they want to give feedback.
Right.
Even like no matter what their experience was, they just feel like that's part of the deal that they entered into. But at some point with Castell, they were just like, awesome.
Right.
Like, okay.
Okay.
That's really an interesting observation. I think we found that too, where you get, you could have the game and it's totally done. You're ready to go. And if you let somebody play it and tell them, hey, it's a prototype, you can see them almost like sometimes digging through their mind, like, I got to tell them something.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I've got to find something to comment on. But if you said, hey, this game is done, it's off to the printer, they'll just play it. Right. Yeah. That's really interesting.
So we did actually have a question in our chat room. Somebody was wondering if his question was from Kevin Pruitt, is paper prototype the best way to start with fleshing out a board game idea? I think that's probably a very personal design question. So is that true with you?
So in my process, when I have a new game idea, I actually will write the rules first. And that's usually where I iron out a lot of the sort of things that you miss when you're just thinking about high concept. And it'll give me a sense of whether I think that the game will be, like the systems will go together, or it'll be a complete system when it's done. And once I get to that, then I go straight to paper. And I will play it by myself, like a bunch of times in order to iron out all of the obvious stuff that, you know, again, like writing the rules, you're not going to catch everything. So in a paper prototype, you're able to actually see it moving, the pieces moving, and you'll catch a lot of the easy stuff to get out of the way. And once you get a playable game, then, you know, I'll reach out to my game designer friends or bring it to a an event where I think people will handle a prototype like that and get some feedback from real people.
Right. So by the time I saw the game at ProtoSpiel, it had already gone through the Cardboard Edison Awards, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So what was it like participating in that?
It was great. I had been showing Castell to publishers probably about 6 months before that, and I wasn't getting very much interest. So I realized that the event or the contests would be sort of a platform that would give the game a little bit more visibility to people that might be interested in it. Because I know a lot of publishers are involved in these types of things, so even if it didn't win, a lot more people would see it. So at that point, like, the game I felt was very developed. So I felt like it would do well. I guess I thought it could win, but it was still a surprise to ultimately have that happen. And yeah, obviously it's been really great since then.
Cool.
After playing your prototype, I'm not surprised at all that it won. It is fantastic. Yeah. Very cool. We do have another question from the chat room. Colin Pastoris was asking, would you say you were inspired by any specific designers or more self-inspired? Kind of where did this idea come from?
The idea definitely came from I highly respect Catalonian culture and was totally inspired by that. I do have a lot of designers that I also really love. let me see if I can go down a list, like Wolfgang Kramer, Matthias Kramer, Inka, Marcus Brand. I love the Splatter guys. Basically, like, very developed, system-oriented Euros I really like. Alexander Spitzer is really good.
You obviously play a lot of heavier Euro games. And it sounds like you had a love for the Castell sport and you married that with this heavier Euro game feel that you obviously, it's the type of game you would play yourself. So where did your love for Castell come from?
I had been traveling a bit in Catalonia and I met a lot of people, made a lot of friends there, and I was just struck by how closely Catalonian people hold their culture, like, to their identity, and how it was just actively expressed in so many different ways in all their holidays and festivals, and not just that, but they took such a lot of pride in their culture, but so many of their traditions are just overwhelmingly positive. Like, Castell is, you know, at its core an expression of culture, but it's also this amazing symbol of a ton of people coming together and doing something that's exceedingly difficult, and coming together and doing it, making something bigger than themselves. And then while it is a competition, they cheer for each other to just make, you know, expand what they can do collectively, as, you know, what one team can do by breaking records is, you know, they're breaking records for all of Catalonia, not just, you know, their particular team. So I just think it's such an amazing expression of culture, and I kind of wish lots of other cultures had similar things, and I hope by sharing it that maybe there's some chance that that will inspire things for the future.
That's really cool. So after we announced the game, one of our localization partners in Spain contacted me and said, hey, this is really cool. We're like most of us in our office are Catalonian. So we hope you guys really got this right.
No pressure.
No pressure. We just happen to be the people that you're representing. So I sent them the rule book. This was, I think, after it had been edited and we were pretty close to being final and sending it off to for production. But I sent them the rule book and I said, here, check it out. Make sure that you guys don't see anything that we might have messed up. And they responded back after a few days after I'd sent it and said, everything's awesome. You guys did a good job. Mm-hmm. So we got the endorsement at least from those guys. So
yeah, I obviously was talking a lot with my friends there to make sure that things were being represented well, and also just to get clarification on certain things, because it was hard to look up information myself because most of it's not in English.
Yeah,
that's available. So I was spending a lot of time on like the Google sites in Catalan to find images and like get details of when things are happening and where they're happening. But also like once like more visibility was, or the game was getting more visibility, I had some people contact me that were board gamers in Catalonia that offered to help out. And in the last couple of months, there was a lot of thematic development as far as like, choosing locations and the colors in the game. And they really, really, really helped a lot with that, which I'm super grateful for.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I'm really looking forward to seeing the response in Spain and kind of throughout Europe, especially when we're at Essen in the fall.
Yeah, so yeah,
it'll be really cool.
So we do have a few more exciting questions for you. Are you ready to have a lot of gamers ask you to join their Castell team at every convention? We're going to get some big gamer towers going on.
I think I would actually be terrible because not only am I pretty light, but I'm very tall. So I don't know where I would
combo. Tower. Yeah, that doesn't describe any of the people in your game anyway.
So this is not the type of game that we can do the big version of it, like the convention version of this game.
Well,
like we can't do the live action. Like we could do big versions. Now we've talked about some of that stuff, but like we can't do the live action version of this game.
Sure.
Right? Like the convention center, I think would lose their minds. Could you imagine the insurance the problems? Yeah, we're just gonna have gamers piling up on each other and building human towers.
Yeah, I don't know if that would fly.
They would totally shut us down. So
just invite a real Castell team.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh my gosh. I would love to see this in person. I've watched some YouTube videos and it is just unbelievable. And I agree, even just watching it, you can tell that everybody is there to support each other and that they're really just trying to see how far they can go as a group together. And honestly, it makes sense that you made a board game out of this because I feel like the board game community is also sort of this way. Like we show up at my board game night every Monday and Thursday and we're just there to have fun and play games and see how well we can do. And nobody cares who wins. Like we don't even remember. We just leave the table and we had fun and we did it together. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like what Castell is all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really cool. Do you know, does this sport happen anywhere in North America? Does anybody do it at all here? Or is it really pretty isolated and just...
Not that I know of. I mean, there are sort of isolated Castell groups, I think, in other places in Europe, but I don't know of it happening in the US. There are also like some similar traditions that have sort of come about independently. I know of one in India that is very similar, but I haven't heard of it in the US.
I think we should start a Renegade Castell team.
Yeah.
Steph already said that she did not want to be part of this in chat, by the way.
What are you talking about?
But Meeple Overboard did make the correct comment that it's one of the few integrated sports where men and women play together. So we could do that with the current team that we have at Renegade.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about it. It's also is that a Castell team, it seems to incorporate everyone, young and old, men and women, people of different sizes. It just carries this very observable connotation of inclusivity along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's really cool. I mean, the sport's super fascinating. It's just just really amazing. I mean, you see the pyramids. Yeah, I mean, if anybody out there has not checked this out on YouTube and looked at the YouTube videos, you really need to check it out. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. So Sarah, I think you would have to be the top of our tower.
I'm pretty short, so that would help. Yeah. We have to get, my sister does customer service for us as well. And so she has a bunch of little kids and we can put them at the top and that'll be perfect. Cause like you said, everybody gets to play.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to anger Jenny. She does customer service.
That's a good point.
No, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, Castell just seems amazing. Seriously, everybody go check out some YouTube videos. I thought I understood the concept. Sure, human towers. I feel like I've seen that before. There's nothing that will prepare you for watching these videos. They're really just unbelievable. So super, super cool.
Oh, so John Paul wants to know, Aaron, why is the Castell bag so small?
They made me do it. I don't know. No. It could be bigger, I suppose.
It could be a sleeping bag if you didn't want to wear it as a hat. Yeah, exactly.
This bag could be a sleeping bag for my cat.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
I mean, the story of the bag size is that's just sort of like, I mean, I buy components online, like on Amazon and other retailers for, I just buy components that I can use in prototypes. And so I have like these cloth bags that, you know, I use in a variety of different prototypes. So this just happened to be the size of the bag I used in this game. And we sort of translated it into the published version. And
there's a chance that this could change in future printings. So the first printing might be a collector's item. So you might want to get out there and pick up the giant, we'll call this the deluxe bag.
Yes, the first edition deluxe.
The first edition deluxe, that's right.
Yeah.
So, no, it's nice. Have you seen the stuff on social media with people wearing it on their head?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So I'm actually kind of miffed at Rodney. Rodney, I think he tried to take credit as the first person to wear the Castell bag on his head.
Oh,
yeah,
who did it first? Was it you?
I did it first, for sure. Okay. I mean, I'm not gonna let Rodney outfool me. Like, I'll make a fool of myself before Rodney will.
Let it be known.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm gonna see him in a couple weeks at Gamma, and we're gonna have words.
Oh my goodness. So yes, I believe that Rodney did a fantastic video for this. If anyone wants to learn how to play and check out Castell, you should definitely go watch Rodney's Watch It Play video. He does an excellent job of teaching you all the rules, so you don't even have to open the fantastic rule book.
Yeah. And then last night, the Heavy Cardboard guys did a playthrough, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hung up for that.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool. So how did I didn't watch the playthrough live because I was out, but I watched it this afternoon. How did it go live? Was it fun?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, there was lots of engagement from their audience. I really like the stuff that they create, and I like have somewhat similar tastes in games with them. So it was cool to have them or like see them play something I made.
Yeah, that was really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's exciting for me. We haven't had a lot of heavier games in our catalog yet, and that's the kind of stuff that I play with my group. They really get into super heavier Euro games, lots of splatter and that type of stuff, and they love this. When I took it to Board Game Night a few weeks ago and actually finally got to play the finished copy, they all jumped all over it. So it's exciting for us to kind of extend that catalog a little bit, where we started with a lot of family games and now we're playing these bigger, heavier games. It's super cool.
Yeah, and yeah, even though like we call it heavy, like part of my goal, and even though like I know I skew like towards this style of game, like I do want it to be like marketable to a more like accessible to a wider audience. And so like, part of my goal in designing games like this is to make them easily understandable. So sort of the holy grail is to have it be very easy and accessible, but just allow for a lot of potentiality or possibility from playing it. And the players, they sort of, they feel like there's a lot possible when they, after they've played it or once they understand the system, even though it wasn't very hard to understand initially.
Yeah, no, I think the replay value is really, really high. And they recognized that last night too. I thought that was neat. That after the game, when they were kind of doing their debrief and talking about it, that they brought out all the other stuff, and it's like, no, you know, there's all these other options that you didn't even see on the table during the game. So yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to go over really well. I like the weight of the game. I think that it's perfect for us. Like, you kind of hit the nail on the head where it's really easy to learn. The rules are not super complicated, but there's a lot of choices in the game. It's thinky and it's going to challenge people. So that's kind of that nice sweet spot. So I think you hit it. I mean, that's kind of why we made it. So
We did decide we liked
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So we actually, well, Scott found your game at the Proto Spiel, of course, but then he brought it back and we played it at our Renegade Summit last year, where all of us on the team, along with a few other friends of Renegade, got together and played a ton of games over a 5-day period. It was super intense. And out of all of the games that we played, we only picked a few that we thought this is really ready. We need to publish this game. And of course, Kestel was one of them. And immediately, as soon as we got onto the table, we were all just talking about it for the rest of the time we were there. It was the standard for everything else that we found that weekend.
Yeah, it became the conversation in between other games. So yeah, that was a good sign. So once again, that's why we did
If we couldn't stop thinking about it after we
Yeah.
played, we figured that would be true for other people. And that was when we got to see it. It was a very nice prototype, but it was still just foam core and, lots of just rules that didn't have graphics and that kind of stuff. But it was
Yeah.
really easy
Yeah.
to understand because the rules really aren't that complicated.
Yeah. So somebody just asked in chat, Ian O'Toole, can you guys see Renegade publishing heavier games in the future, or is Castell on the upper end of complexity? No, we'll make heavier games. I think we've already made some heavy games, and we have some other stuff we're going to be announcing pretty soon, right? I don't know. I don't know the schedules. I just sign projects and make projects, get projects started, and then Sarah has to deal with the actual announcements and stuff.
That's true. Well, and now Steph, she gets to help me too.
That's right.
So we already put out Kepler at the end of last year. So if you like a little bit meatier, a little bit thinkier games, that is an awesome game. Kepler 3042. Definitely check that one out. And then we have Pytown, which is a really interesting Euro that we also found just a few days after we found Kestel, actually. We found that at another designer meetup type event. And then we are about to publish Altiplano, which again fits into that category beautifully of relatively simple rules, but there's a lot of meat there, and it's going to take you a couple hours to get through that game.
Yeah.
So we're establishing that part of our category very nicely, and there's lots to love in that part of Renegade now.
When are we announcing that game? It's not a super heavy game, but when are we announcing the game by that German fellow?
that will be at Gamma, so we have a couple weeks.
A few weeks for announcing a game by a certain German gentleman. So,
Hopefully most of you will recognize him. I'd be surprised if you don't.
Yeah. He's fairly well known for heavy games. So this game isn't, definitely not one of his heavy games. We'll see.
I'm very excited for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and then Mark Thompson mentioned Sentient as well. So that one's interesting because it's another J. Alex Caverne game, and it's like a 45-minute, less than an hour experience, but very thinky. Lots of different paths to victory, lots of interconnected cogs in a big machine that you can build. So it's also very good.
So Aaron, do you know Alex? Are you guys buddies?
Haven't met him, but you know, just through Twitter and sort of observed each other, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah, we got to get you guys together. I think that you have similar tastes in games. You guys would hit it off. Unfortunately, you're on your opposite sides of the country, so
we're
on the other side. So,
yeah, I was lucky enough to get to hang out with Alex and look at some of his new designs just a couple days ago in New York.
Cool.
Yeah, he is amazing. He always has new stuff. I just don't know how, as a designer, you can always have new concepts that you're thinking of and so much work to put them together. So do you have anything else you're working on now? Any little prototypes in the back?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I think all game designers, it's more a struggle to work on like a few games rather than a lot. Those new ideas can be pretty seductive.
So that's interesting. We've talked to a lot of designers just since we started this little show. And what we've consistently heard is that they like working on something and then setting it aside and then going to something else. Do you feel that like kind of that palette cleanse sort of process helps you?
It depends, I think. I mean, sometimes I feel the way and sometimes I don't. It's more that if you've been working on something for a while and some of the solutions that you're trying are not like solving a particular design problem, it can often be frustrating and like somewhat disincentivize you to work on the game. So often time will just allow you to come to the problem with a fresh perspective. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of when I find that to be the most useful. But I also think working on multiple projects, because often you'll have ideas for some projects that will inspire others. It's sort of like just in the same way that playing games can help just boost your creativity or inspiration, like design, working on different designs and even my day job or like working on, you know, anything creative will sort of indirectly help what all the other projects that you're working on.
Yeah.
So you don't find that playing other games gets you stuck on thinking about those ideas? Like it helps you be creative and think of new different ideas?
Oh, yeah. I think it's imperative that you play lots of games. You'll learn what works together, the limits of certain things, mechanics that you didn't know were possible. Like a designer has to basically be, I don't know, filling their experience bank with as many different things as possible in order to really have things to draw upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm always so surprised, like, 4 years ago, I would have said, deck building's over. We've seen everything it can do. Let's move on. Yep. That clearly was incorrect.
So, Sarah, somebody in chat guessed who the German fellow is that we were referencing.
Somebody got it right?
Yeah, they said Albert Einstein.
Oh, nice. I always knew you'd know.
Yeah. So, nice. That is not correct.
Surprise.
It would be amazing if someday, yeah, maybe somebody will find some game design, you know, in some old file that old Albert put together.
Unlikely, but not impossible.
Not impossible. Never say never.
There are some good games about Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
So Netter's Play asked if you have thought about working with other designers to collaborate on a game.
gosh. I guess I haven't really thought about it, but I certainly would. I do like collaborating a lot. Obviously, like, you know, the video games industry is very collaborative. You're usually working on pretty big teams. And I mean, even this project on Castell was, you're usually collaborating with a lot of different people, like an illustrator, graphic designer, and everyone else involved. So yeah, I would definitely be up for it.
So this is your first published board game, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So how was the process? Like, that's interesting, right? So you spent all this time working kind of alone and playtesting with people. Mm-hmm. And some people might not even know you had gone as far as to contract an artist and actually made a down payment on art and got art going. And when you first, like, when I was talking to you about it, I'm like, hey, you know, we want to publish the game and everything. And you said, oh, I have art going. Like, for a second, my heart stopped. Because I can't tell you how many times I've heard that, and you know, and then I look at the art and I'm like, oh, maybe not what we want to do. And you know, it's not insurmountable, but not always like the best foot to start off on. And then you told me that it was Aussie, and you know, for other people that don't know, he did the art for Honshu, which we also published in English, and all that. So then it was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, it's a good deal. But beyond that, like, so once you started working with us, and you had mentioned, right, so you've got like Anita, who's our creative director, and she does graphic design, but then we also have other graphic designers on the team, and you know, editors, and everybody's kind of in there. How did that process feel compared to kind of working really in isolation up until that point? And now, you know, it's like flip the switch, everybody's involved, everybody has an opinion. You know, so it's not, you know, it's not quite the same. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. I have a particular skill set that contributed to, you know, or got the game to where it was, that I definitely recognize that in order to make the final product, of what it ended up as, that I would need to rely on the expertise of a lot of other people in order to accomplish that. So working with you guys has been such a pleasure that like, I have felt that you guys cared a lot about you know, the presentation of the theme and kept me a very significant part of the process and helping guide that through. And so it was really pretty easy for me.
All right.
And everyone involved. Yeah,
so, we hadn't talked about it, so I had no idea. This could have been like gone horribly sideways, and Aaron could have been, well, now that you bring it up, it was awful, and I would never do that again. So,
yeah.
So, all right, yeah. Well, it's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everybody on the team is really pretty good and collaborative, and like the one thing I really like about our team is there's no egos. People throw out ideas all the time, and sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. Like, I'm first in line as far as that goes. I'm constantly throwing out stuff, and I will tell people, like, this might not be a good idea, but maybe it'll make you think of something else. So it's pretty good. Probably the only person in our team that's just kind of, like, mean is Alicia. Like, I give her, you know. So it's her job. She's in charge of schedules, but, you know, kind of the enemy of fun.
Oh no, that's my title. She can't have that one.
Yeah, we'll come up with a new title. Sarah's the enemy of fun. Leisha's the devourer of souls or something. Like, just,
I appreciated the frankness.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she'll just come out and tell you. She's like, hey, your game's not going to come out on time. You need to make a decision, you know?
It's yeah.
Like, hey, good to know. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
So
she's very helpful. I don't know what we would do without her.
I know. We love her. We just, you know, she just beats us up. So okay.
Nice.
So how are we doing on questions?
Oh, let's see.
So in chat, Steph is sucking up to Leisha now. Steph is saying, Leisha is super awesome and fun. I mean, that's a viable strategy. You want to be on Leisha's good side. So I don't blame her for that.
So there was another question. I don't know how to answer this one. Maybe somebody else does. A desire to pursue an expandable CIG LCA type game. I honestly don't know what that is.
What? CIG?
Yeah. Further explanation, Eric Davila. We'll get one in a few moments. So we'll come back to that question.
Yeah. So Brad says that he hopes all those titles like Enemy of Fun are on the business cards. Well, Brad, they weren't, but they will be.
Oh! So when we set up meetings at conventions or trade shows or whatever, we do have a little thing where you can log in and you can set up an appointment with somebody on our team. And there were lots of exciting titles inserted into that program for a while. We should go back and revisit those.
Yeah.
Oh, living card games.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Expandable living card games like Netrunner.
Oh, so if we're interested?
I think it's for anyone who would like to answer.
Oh.
For Aaron and Renegade.
Oh. I'm going to let you guys handle that one.
Well, I would argue that we already have, because Clank is awesome and we keep having more stuff. And even though it doesn't exactly fit into that definition, I would say it's an expandable game and that there are expansions for it that you can pick up or decide not to pick up.
Yeah, you can kind of pick and choose. So John Paul says a CCG slash LCG in the Clank universe. Now that's different.
That is a little different. That's true.
That's very different. No plans. So I wouldn't say that we'll never do, I wouldn't say we'd never ever do a CCG, but I can't imagine right now how that would even happen. Mm-hmm. So it would have to be something that comes along that we just couldn't say no to.
There are challenges with CCGs that I wouldn't have ever thought of until I worked in an office where we were making a CCG for World of Warcraft. You really need a lot of people dedicated to designing it all the time. Yeah. And they really need to be in a space together. And we're all remote. Our entire team lives where we want to live. And we all just get on Slack or Skype and do what we need to do. But you really can't do that as a CCG.
No. Brad says that thought you guys had a no RPG rule too. So, yes,
that's a good point.
Well played, sir. Well played.
You got fired, hired back again, you know.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Cool. We will talk more about RPGs very soon. I'm very excited about them.
Yeah.
Should be good. Well, I think that was a lot of questions for Aaron already. So we really appreciate you answering all of them for us. We have a few more last little things in our show. A few fun reveals for our dedicated fans that are still here with us. And a few just little sort of notes for the week to tell you guys what we have going on. So this week I had the wonderful opportunity to go to what's called New York Toy Fair. And in New York, everybody gets together and it's the entire toy industry plus all of the board game industry, which is just absolutely dwarfed by the rest of the toy industry. They've been around a lot longer than us. There are a lot more toy stores, a lot more in that business. So we have this little kind of tiny corner in the enormous New York Convention Center that's just our industry. And then you wander around and see all sorts of plush ponies and wooden blocks and things everywhere else. So that was pretty awesome. Very overwhelming if you've never been to it before. It's like an interesting experience. But what we do, the reason that I go there is to show off our games to industry folks who will be promoting them and interested in purchasing them for the rest of the year. So one thing we wanted to spoil for you guys is a prototype that I made up to show off at some of my meetings. So this is a prototype. Not very, very well-made one, but that's okay. And this is for an upcoming game that we haven't actually announced yet, but there's been a little bit of info sort of floating around on the internet about it. So this is Junk Orbit. And this is coming out from us in June. It's It's by Daniel Solis. He designed Kodama and several other amazing, awesome little small card games. And we actually announced another game from him this week already. It's called Wonderland. It's going to be an International Tabletop Day exclusive product. So this will come out right after that does. And yeah, hey, Scott, do you want to tell us a little bit about this game?
About Junk Orbit?
Yeah.
So Junk Orbit, it's kind of cool. So there's the different planets, and then there's all these tiles that are kind of like in a, if I remember right, figure eight pattern that goes around them. And you're moving your ships and you're picking stuff up. And the way the mechanics work is you're kind of slingshotting around things and having to plan where your ship is going to wind up and deliver things to the other sections and picking up points and all that. It's really cool. The like if you played Daniel's other games, like it has like a little rocket ship meeples.
Yeah, that's one of the player pieces.
Yeah. So somebody might have been Daniel himself, like described this game to me when he first pitched it as the kind of in the Gravwell spiritual successor to Gravwell family. So I could see if you kind of like Gravwell that you might like Junk Orbit too. But I don't know, what is our, we haven't officially announced this one, even though we've got everything to show off.
it's true.
So it's a June release. We'll have it at the Gamma Trade Show in a few weeks to show off early.
We will. So we're announcing this one just in the next couple days, but you guys are special and get to see it first. And like Scott said, this would be one of the planets that you're orbiting around, and you have all these different places where you're going to be trying to deliver goods. And if you can deliver enough goods to the various different places, then you'll get points, and that's awesome. There's a set collection aspect to it. But the thing that I love about this game the most is that it plays off the physics idea that if your ship is here in the middle and you push something this way, you're going to move this way. And so all of the junk that you have in your ship, if you shoot it out this direction, your ship's going to move this direction, but you're trying to get to the right place to deliver the junk to the correct location. So it's a really fascinating mechanic. I really haven't seen it before. It's a fun pick up and deliver kind of an idea, and absolutely gorgeous. I am just blown away by the beautiful art in this game. It's awesome.
Yeah, it came out pretty good. We agonized over that cylinder box for quite a while.
Yeah, it's a challenge. So for those fans in the chat room there today, what do you guys think about having this on your shelf? It's definitely going to be a nice display piece. Like, I'm going to put it up on my top shelf there for sure and just have it really stand out. What do you guys think about that? We'll give you guys a few minutes to catch up in the chat room. I think it's really cool.
But the big question is, can you take the box, take the cylinder, and then flip it over and wear it as a hat?
I don't know. I have to be very careful, but I think it could work.
Oh, the lid. Oh, that's like those like little flight attendant hats from the 50s.
Yeah. Do I have to wear this at our next booth? I have to get like a little rubber band. Actually, I did ballet when I was a kid, and I'm pretty sure my teacher hated children as much as I do now, because we had to wear little hats kind of like this, and she would hot glue them to our heads. I never went back after that. it was
that, that is the best idea I've heard all day. We are going to have little Junk Orbit hats made for the staff to work in the Gamma Trade Show booth.
I have to make a lot more of these prototypes
then. So anybody that doesn't like that, you have Sarah to blame.
It's all my fault. Oh, no. So the other game that I am kind of sad about a little bit here that I got to show off this week, but my luggage was kind of cracked open and this was partially destroyed on the way back. But we're showing off T-Dragon Society. So this one, we'll also be announcing more about this game in the next few days. And that game, oh my gosh, we keep seeing artwork from it and all the card designs, and it is adorable. It's going to be an awesome game.
Yeah.
So Let's see, what else do we have going on? Oh, also Prowler's Passage. We announced that one this last week. But if you want to see kind of the size of the box, that's what it's actually going to look like. And you can get an idea in between Honshu and Castell. And that's a J. Alex Cavern game. It's just two player only. If you enjoyed Fox in the Forest and really like that battle of wits, that tug of war, this is going to be the next game for you. And it's a J. Alex Cavern game, so you know it's going to be good.
There you go.
Yeah, so I got to show all those off this weekend to a bunch of different people in the industry. Got to talk to some great designers and see some stuff that they have coming out for the next year. So it was a really great event.
Nice. And yeah. I'm super excited about Toy Fair this year because I didn't go.
That's true.
That was my favorite part about Toy Fair is now Sarah can go.
A little unfair, but no, I got to go and got to go see all the fun stuff. So
yeah.
I'll take it. So the other thing our team has going on this week is getting ready for the Gamma Trade Show. And yeah, we have some really, really big announcements that we'll be putting out during that week. So make sure to check that out and stay tuned. And we're going to try and do some fun filming there and kind of give you guys an idea of what that show looks like, because I know sure, not a lot of people get to go to it.
So let's see. What announcements do we have? We have the one attached to the German fellow.
Yep, yep.
Are we announcing one about the guys and the stuff doing the thing?
Yeah, that one I'm hoping. We're waiting a little bit, but we have all a right, few things before that one is good to go.
What other announcements are there that we can't talk about?
Well, it's hard to talk about them.
you have to learn how to be cryptic.
So I do actually legitimately have some announcements about organized play stuff that we have going on for the rest of the year that I'll be telling retailers about. And I hope you guys are really excited about it, because I know promos are kind of a big deal and we want to make ones that aren't, you know, just the same old thing over and over again, ones that you can really care about and be excited for. So we have some of that we'll be announcing as well.
Nice.
It'd be good. So unless you had anything else, is it time for the Game Component Challenge?
It is time for the Game Component Challenge.
All right. I have it all ready. So I'm going to keep talking during this part just to make sure that you guys can see the screen and so that Scott and Aaron don't pop up by accident. But the first person to type this in gets a copy of the game. You guys all ready? All right, fingers on the keyboard. First one to type it in. All right, here we go. And any guesses? This is from one of our designers that I get to see him more than other designers we have, because we have a few events in his area. It's always a blast. He has one of my favorite local game stores in the whole country. And I think we have a winner. Colin Pastoris guessed Flatline, and that is correct. This yep, is one of the die from Flatline. And this game is cooperative. It's in the same universe as Fuse. You get to be one of the people in the medical bay. You roll dice to save patients. And I love, love, love these custom dice. They've got all these crazy, funky little things on here. And I think it was a great graphic design challenge to make sort of alien looking medical devices. And I think Anita did a really great job on that.
Yep.
Very cool. So thank you, Colin. Make sure you send us an email at customer service after the show and we will get you hooked up with a copy of Flatline, one of the heaviest games that we have.
That's true. That game weighs 5 pounds.
It does. It's a little out of control. And then as far as games we have right now, we had a few updates this week. We got reviewer copies for Sabotage, which is a pirate-themed game, real-time drafting, and you get to blow up each other's pirate ships, which is very fun. We also got review copies of The Mummy's Curse, which is the upcoming expansion for Clank, and the expansion for Explorers of the North Sea, which is Rocks of Ruin. So keep your eyes out. We're going to have some reviewers posting about those very shortly, which should be fun. And we also have some contests. Today is the last day to enter the Byzance contest. That game is coming out March 14th. We're getting really close to it. It's an awesome little auction card game. It's also by the same partner that we have in Finland who did Honshu, Lautapelit. They make really great games. And this is one of their ones that they've had around for a while that's been very successful. And we just really wanted to bring that to the US. And after we are done with the Byzance contest, we are moving on to Lucidity Six-Sided Nightmares. So look for that contest as well. Thank you guys so much. It's been awesome having all of you in the chat room. And please give a shout out to Steph. She does such a great job answering all of your questions and keeping the chat room going. She's amazing. And thank you, Aaron, for coming on our show this week. It's been a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Great, thanks. And we will be back on March 7th at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific time, and we would love to see you guys all there. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye, everybody.